know those American ball games where you wear a helmet on your head and you wear a cage over your face? You wear a catcher's mitt to protect your hand in case it should come into contact with a ball. I understand you wear a thing to protect your testicles, the male players. You wear a suit of armor under your t-shirt and shorts. So I presume you wear gloves as well that you use when you're throwing something. Now, if you were to throw something from that big glove, maybe it's like a catcher's mitt, but you use it to throw. Or maybe it's the same thing. Can you throw with a catcher's mitt? I don't really care, to be perfectly honest. Let's assume you can for a moment. Let's assume that there's some sort of joint glove or mitt that you use when you're throwing. And you throw the ball out of that. If the ball doesn't leave the glove, that's not throwing. It hasn't been thrown anywhere. It's still there. And the same is true of vomiting. If it doesn't leave the mouth, that's not throwing up. Young people like to use the phrase, I just threw up in my mouth a bit, which is clearly horse shit. It's not throwing up unless it leaves the mouth. The mouth is the throwing implement. That's like if you said, I'm bleeding out into my hand. What kind of statement is that? If you're bleeding out into your hand, it means nothing. Normal circulation is going on inside your arm. The blood is going down through your veins in your arm and then into your hand as it's supposed to be. So you're bleeding out from your torso into your hand. The only thing that would count as bleeding out into your hand would be if you injured your face and you held your hand under it to catch the blood. Well, why would you do that? Well, I suppose to catch the blood, I don't know. Maybe you're worried about protecting the carpet or something. You don't want to call an ambulance because there are 8 billion euros in your part of the world. I understand from podcasts and social media, there's a lot of people in America who are afraid to call an ambulance when they need one because they're going to get a bill that's going to bankrupt you. And then the ambulance gets you to the hospital and you still have to get a bus home. You don't have very good public transportation, I understand. This segment was better the first time I did it. And then I realised I wasn't recording. But then I realised I said stuff I wanted to say, so I decided to try and recreate it. It's not going quite as well as it did the first time. The blood in the hand stuff sounded a lot better the first time round. It flowed naturally, so to speak. It's the equivalent of throwing content up into my mouth, but it's never getting into the recording. It's the same as that. It's fucking shit. Anyway, on with the show. Into your head. 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 Once upon a time, there was a dog. A dog. A dog. A dog. A dog. A dog, basically a dog. And this dog, he was walking along the street one day, minding his own business, watching out for somewhere where he might like to take a piss, a passing tree, or a passing car tire, or a passing anything. Literally anything. A dog will piss on literally anything. Except, of course, empty space. They won't piss onto empty space. Because if you piss onto empty space, you have no idea. It's a bit like, it's the opposite of snow. When it starts snowing, especially in this mild country, a lot of the time the snow doesn't stick and you don't know for a while whether it's going to stick. When you see snowfall, you think, oh, it's probably not going to stick. And dogs have the same problem when they're urinating. They have to have something for it to stick to so they can make sure they've urinated properly. If you just piss into the air and it disperses, then they've no idea. They haven't marked any territory. They haven't pissed on anything. They haven't left a smell or a mark that they can check. They need to confirm that they've had a piss. It's a bit like when you're being conscious of your diet or your digestion problems. You inspect what's in the toilet before you flush. Well, a dog has to do that all the time. A dog has to do it more than us humans because a dog has no idea what goes into the food we give them. No control over it whatsoever. And in fact, if it knew the whole truth, which was that their owners have no control of what goes into that food either, because it's made in some factory somewhere and shoved into a tin. No, the dog has no idea what's going into that. So he has to inspect what comes out. Say, I wonder what I've eaten and what effect it has had on me. So it pisses somewhere where I can inspect it. It's like when we piss onto some sort of a stick. Like, for example, when you do a pregnancy test, you piss onto a stick or some sort of testing implement. Well, a dog pisses onto a tree or a curb or the wheel of a car or somewhere, anything other than the air, because the air isn't reliable. The piss doesn't stick to the air and you don't know where it's going to land. It's just vapor. You can't really inspect vapor. When women test perfumes in the shop, they spray in the air. Oh wait, is that what they do? No, what's that thing to do to test fragrances in the department stores? When you go up to a department store counter, I think they spray on their wrist. Is that it? I think they spray onto the front of their wrist, or what some would call the back of their wrist. I recall that the front of my wrist. I suppose, well, I don't know, what's the normal resting state for a hand? Is it facing outwards? Surely not. You don't keep your hand raised up with your palm facing outwards like this. No, you certainly don't keep your palm of your hand facing towards you with your hand vertical in front of your face. Is that the resting state for a hand? I'm trying it right now and it certainly doesn't feel very restful. So that's definitely not the resting state for a hand. When I turn it around and face my palm away from me, I still have my hand raised in front of my, just beside my face. That's a little more comfortable, but it still doesn't feel like a resting state for the hand. No, the resting state for the hand, I suppose, would be on the lap. But you don't always have a lap, so that's the resting state for your hand when you're sitting down to rest. But if you're standing up, where's the resting state for the hand? Maybe there isn't one. Maybe your hand is supposed to be always active. When you're standing or walking, you're not supposed to have a resting state. Maybe it's like the engines on an aircraft. You don't have a resting state for the engines on an aircraft. They're always on. Always on. So maybe your hands are always on unless you're sitting down or moving. I suppose just that's possible. Certainly if you're a dog, your front elbows, your front arms, what we call on a dog, the elbows and arms and hands, those are never resting while it's walking or standing. They are not. They're not resting at all. They're moving just as much as their hind feet. In fact, possibly more. I don't know. Is a dog operated by four-wheel drive or the equivalent thereof in terms of legs? Or do the front legs drag the other legs behind it in the same way a front-wheel drive car does? I know the legs at the back are moving as much as the front legs. But on a two-wheel drive car, if you're driving, the engine is turning the front wheels. The back wheels are moving just as much, but they're moving because of the momentum of the car moving. There's no energy being put directly into them by the engine. No. We did a lot on the anatomy of a dog last week. I even turned part of it into a video, which you can find on Into Your Head Shorts on YouTube. I didn't mean to turn that into a series, so let's not go down that road again for now. You'll get totally bogged down and obsessed with dog anatomy and it will get a bit much, I can tell you. It'll get a bit much. No, let's not get obsessed with dog anatomy on here. You've probably done it before with cats, have we? I don't remember. I'm sure we have. In the early days of this podcast, I had a house, the population of which was at least 80% cats. I can't do the maths while I'm speaking. Maybe I'll do that sometime. No, there was a time when there was a very, very high cat to human ratio in my home. The ratio is lower than it used to be now, but there's still, let's see, there's 3 humans and 4 cats currently in this house. That's the highest human to cat ratio we've had in some time. A sibling lives with us now, so that's affected the ratio. When you add another sibling into a home, it affects your cat-to-human ratio instantly. Of course, if you had a sibling who had cats and they moved the cats in, that could go the other way then. But it didn't. That wasn't the case. So it didn't. And there's no point wishing that it did, because it just didn't. It did not. It just occurred to me after listening back to that dog segment. It's probably several of you screaming at your playback device saying they don't spray on anything. the perfume at the fragrance counter when they're testing it. They spray it into the air and then they walk through it. Like you would a fine mist. You walk through it to enjoy the mist. Like you're in some sort of classic novel out in the fog with Heathcliff and Wuthering Heights. Either Pip or Heathcliff, one of those. They're always out in some foggy English place out on some moorland where there's probably been hundreds of murderers committed since. And they go out on some moorland and there's always fog. And then Heathcliff appears as a ghost. I don't remember the exact details of either Wuthering Heights or that other thing with Pip in it. Great Expectations. There's Great Expectations and there's Wuthering Heights. And my memory of those is that there's always some fog, some foggy place. They probably didn't realize until 100 years later that that's not fog. It's smog created by whatever they're doing in those factories they have. They had factories back then. They had 10-year-olds working in them, building things out of coal, basically. They turn the coal into soap. They get filthy doing it. It's all these soaps. I don't know if you young people realize. Back in the old days before we had shower gels and body washes and chest lotions and wipes for using after you use toilet roll and special deodorant for your feet and stuff for putting on after you cut your face shaving and stuff that you put on after you shave to keep it moist. Stuff that you put on to re-moisten and rehydrate your face after washing it with water. All those sorts of products, they weren't around in those days. All they had was soap. And the soap, we learned with fascination in school when I was about 10, we learned that soap is made from coal. One of the filthiest things known to man. I say filthy, it's not like it smells of shit or anything. It's not like manure or silage or something. No, it's not that bad. It's not like you've swum through the sewerage pipes. No, it's just dust. It's no more dirty than a chalk duster that you use to wipe a blackboard. You can say that gets dirty, but it's just white dirt. And in the same way, the dirt that coal puts on everything is just the same thing. No difference except the colour. Maybe it's a race thing. I don't know. People get all weird about it. When you send your child to work in the coal mines in the 17th century, they come back covered in coal, their face fully covered in black dust. Should that not be prevented by wearing balaclavas or something? I don't know. Maybe that's considered bad for their skin. That's going to dry out even more. Living in a century where there's no hydration products of any kind. The only hydration they had in those days was tea. They'd get out a teapot. And they'd boil some water on the stove and they'd dispense the water into the teapot. They didn't have tea bags in those days. They had tea leaves. I remember as a child, there was a time when we hadn't yet moved to tea bags. You get a box and it had a bag inside it and that was full of tea leaves and you'd measure them out just like you do now with instant coffee. Now, is that right? Do I have that right? Oh, yes, I have it right. Yes, you measure it out with a spoon. You put it into the teapot and then you pour the water on top of it. Then you let it sit for 4 minutes to draw. I think you do that with tea leaves, do you? You certainly do with tea bags. The important thing to do so you don't choke to death is keep the lid of the teapot closed and pour through the spout, which has a strainer in it so the leaves don't end up in your cup. Because that's gross and disgusting. It'll choke you to death. Little bits of tea leaves will get through into the tea. You might think, that's just some extra nutrition you're getting there. Like when you get the skin of the milk. I get the fucking skin of the milk a lot lately. It's starting to annoy me. I drink a huge mug of coffee and I pour some milk on top. About 3 or 4 sips in, I get the disgusting film or whatever it is that comes from the milk and it goes into my mouth. It's disgusting. I usually just pick it out. I throw it somewhere in disgust. I go, what in the name of Christ is this? They've been using bottled processed milk for 800 years now and they still can't figure out how not to have a skin on it. Maybe they think people like it. There are people who enjoy that sort of thing. They think, oh, I want the skin on the milk. It's exactly like getting the heel on a pack of sliced bread. It is not. It's completely different. The heel from a loaf of sliced bread is one of the finest things known to man. It's very different from the skin from a bottle or a carton of milk. Very, 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 very different. Very different, especially if you toast it. There's a world of difference. World of difference. You don't put the skin of a milk on that, I can tell you. No. You put half a kilo of butter and you eat it before it melts. You're basically eating butter. That's the thing. Well, people think of that with milk. They say, oh, look, I got the skin. I'm like the cat who got the cream. No, you're not. You're not remotely like the cat who got the cream. You're not. That's ridiculous. For one thing, the cat who got the cream wasn't drinking a beverage at the time. They got the cream from someone else's beverage or someone else's leftover cream. It was a little bonus leftovers. It wasn't in the middle of their beverage. They weren't drinking from the water bowl and then halfway through they went, oh, I got the film of the milk in this for some reason. If they did that, they'd assume it was contaminated. They'd say, no, that's contaminated. I'm not drinking that. Replace my water immediately. Or at your leisure. At your leisure, because I'm going out now. I'm going to go out and chase some dogs. I'm going to chase the dog from the dog story earlier in this podcast. In fact, it was in the preceding segment. The segment to which this segment is being adjoined, in fact. Oh yes, I remember the way they test perfumes at a perfume counter is by spraying it into the air. And then you walk through the mist that's created by it. They don't like to spray customers directly. It's probably insurance issues involved in that. You can't just spray things at people. No, you spray it into the air. And then you let them know you can walk through that air at your own risk. Make it clear that it's your choice. You're doing it voluntarily. Nobody is pushing you. What you're not allowed to do is then push the customer towards the mist to test it. That could cause legal problems. If for some reason they have an accident while sniffing the perfume, you've pushed them into that. So, you know, you don't do that. You spray into the air beside them and you allow them to voluntarily walk through it. And then they sniff it as they walk through. And they say, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting air. That's interesting air. How much air can you fill with this as a matter of interest? Is it like the stuff you spray around your cat litter trays when you're not quite ready to change them? You need to buy yourself another hour so you spray the general area. Is it like that? They'll say, no, it's not like that at all. And you'll say, how would you know? You're a 19-year-old sales assistant. You don't have cats. You probably don't have a house. You probably either live with your parents or with 12 students in some dormitory. How in the name of Christ would you know whether that's like that or not like that? You've no experience of owning or managing a cat bathroom. And they'll say, that's true. That's true. Although I am training to be a vet. This is my night job. I'm training to be a vet. So we do use litter trays down at the veterinary surgery because a lot of the less well cats have to stay overnight. So there is that. And of course, you'll say to that. You say, oh, I suppose that's true. That's true. You have a point there. I never thought of that. I never thought of that. And why would I? Why would I know that you're training to be a vet? And they'll say, because I literally just told you. And we have this conversation every time you come here. It's getting fucking ridiculous. I'm going to spray this into the air now. Whether you want to walk through it or not is your choice. Now, that adds an extra problem. Since you can't push someone into the vapor that you've sprayed, when you spray the perfume into the air for the customer to sample and another customer unknowingly walks through that area and experiences that, does that cause problems for you too? Maybe they don't want that smell on them. I certainly wouldn't. Now, I say coal isn't as filthy as things like sewage and stuff, but and that is just dust. But the problem with saying it's just dust is that back in the 1980s in this country, referring to something as just dust had implications and ramifications. It brought up images of, see the problem, you see, in those days. We had a thing called Easter, which a large percentage of the country celebrated or marked or were made to mark or were exposed to. And you'd have this thing called Easter. It would fall on a different date every year, usually sometime in the spring, sometime March or April, usually. I recall BRB set as the third Sunday after the second rotation of the moon, with whereby the shadow falls on the something or other. They'd have some way of calculating Easter every year. And a few weeks before Easter, you'd have a thing called, you had a thing called Ash Wednesday. And that was when people used to go to their Catholic church and get ashes put on them. A priest would cook up some ashes in whatever cooking equipment they have in the church. He'd cook up some ashes. And he'd dip his finger into the ashes, and then he'd make a sign of a cross on your forehead with this filth. He'd draw a little cross on your forehead, and you weren't supposed to wash it off. You do this in the morning sometime, and you'd wear the filth on your forehead all day. You'd go to work or school or wherever with that filth on your forehead as a sign. He'd say, draw it on your forehead, and while he's drawing it on your forehead, he'd say something along the lines of, "You are filth, you are the scum of the earth, and when you die, you will become the scum of the earth again. You'll see ashes to ashes," basically, was the thing. Or is it, "You are from ashes, and you are dust, and to dust you shall return"? Well, we all know what he meant. He meant, you're the scum of the earth. You're being allowed to incarnate in this flesh of yours. Which you're probably going to do some filthy things over the next 70 to 90 years. And at some point, God is going to go, "No, that's enough with that shit. Give that body back, you're done." And then you'll be returned to dust. That's the thing with dust. Dust had connotations in those days. So if I say coal wasn't as bad as other types of dirt, such as sewage, it was just a dust. Dust was a bad thing. Dust is basically death. Dust was death to us, at least as children, as we viewed it, as we had this particular belief pumped into us in school for 10 or 13 years. Didn't really have any choice in the matter. We had religious instruction. We were told, "You're filth, and to filth you shall return." Now, of course, they had this. I say, of course, most normal people in the world don't know this. But Ash Wednesday always came the day after Pancake Tuesday. Now, I don't know which. I presume Ash Wednesday's date was set first. So Pancake Tuesday came the day before Ash Wednesday. So people on Pancake Tuesday, be great excitement. Someone would have to cook up pancakes. Now, I know you Americans think, so fucking what? We have pancakes every day. Literally every day we put pancakes on. Literally every day we get up out of bed and someone goes, "Has anyone got the pancakes ready? Get the pancakes. Get the pancake out. I want the pot. You have huge stacks of pancakes." You even call them stacks. The height of gluttony, eating a stack of anything. If I eat a stack of toast, that's considered gluttony, because I consider a stack of toast to be 12 slices. Now, it looks a bit higher when you add marmalade. If I was having 12 slices, I would only add marmalade to at most 4 to 6 of the slices, because there's such a thing as too much marmalade in your digestive system. So if I was having a stack of toast the way you Americans have your... the way you Americans have your stack of pancakes, I would have no more than 12 slices. I would butter all of them, but I would only put marmalade on 4 to 6 of them. You have your pancakes, you have your 85 pancake stack, and you add some sort of syrup to it. Is it the Canadian stuff? I'm not sure. We only know pancakes from McDonald's for breakfast. We had pancakes from McDonald's sometimes for breakfast. You go in. Yeah, obviously you have to have a bath after you eat them. Anyway, that's not the point here. The point is, there's Pancake Tuesday here. It's a tradition that comes on whenever. We were children. You get home. It'll be a big problem, because you had to have pancakes on those days. But when do you have it? Because We'd come home, we'd have a evening meal when we got home from school, you'd have dinner. You can't replace dinner with pancakes. You can't have it as a dessert because it's more than a dessert. Pancakes are not a dessert. That's ridiculous. You don't have them for breakfast because we're not Americans. In fact, this just occurred to me. Maybe everyone else's house on Pancake Tuesday was having them for breakfast. Is that possible? I never asked any of the other children. Now that I think about it, do you have your pancakes when you get home? Or do you make them later on at bedtime or something, or a couple of hours after dinner? When do you have them? Because Pancake Tuesday is invariably a school day. You're not sitting at home all day deciding, will we have them for lunch? Will we have brunch or a late breakfast or afternoon tea of pancakes because it's Pancake Tuesday? No, you'd have to have them sometime, and it wasn't obvious when you were supposed to have them. And now that I think of it, I don't know when we had them, but we definitely had pancakes. On Pancake Tuesday. And then the very next day, Ash Wednesday, first thing you get up in the morning, you'd go to school, and then around 10 o'clock in the morning, the whole class would be marched down to the local church, and the priest would line you up, you'd be lined up, and he'd put this filth on your forehead and tell you, these pancakes are going to be the death of you. You've only had them less than 24 hours since you gorged on them, and now look at you, you're up in front of this priest on this altar, same place you're going to be when you're dead. You'll be in a box and you'll be brought up to this same altar, or maybe in another altar thousands of miles away, because it's the 80s, you're probably going to emigrate. So if whatever, no doubt, perhaps the priest will have emigrated as well. I don't know. No, you go up to the altar and he dabs this filth onto your forehead. He says, you're filth, and to filth you shall return. Now, some of the hippies I know in the 60s tried to turn this into a more enlightened version of it. They'll say, you're dust, you're stardust. He'd say, we're stardust and we're golden and we have to get ourselves back to the whatever it was. Wasn't that a thing? The hippies did that. They had those songs in the 60s. They go, you're stardust. Now, that's not really, I don't find that a relief or assuring at all. You're stardust. That implies, because when you're saying we're dust, that's fine. It means we all return to dust. We all know that in a way. When we start talking about in terms of stardust, that's saying the whole fucking universe is dust. It's all going to be gone someday. So not even the place where they scatter your ashes after you're dead, that's not even going to survive. The sun that shines down on it isn't going to survive. That's all going to go back to dust and filth and muck. And there's going to be nowhere for the dust and filth and muck to settle. It's just going to be flying through space. Orbiting whatever is left outside. I don't know what's left after all that. We'll just be flying around in space. Like your fucking Gene Roddenberry, your man who created Star Trek, didn't they? Put him orbiting in space after he died. Now, you can't have everyone doing that. I know there are people who've associated with space travel or science fiction who it's appropriate to lay them to rest in space with their ashes orbiting somewhere. But you can't do that for 7 billion people. That's just silly. So that's off-putting as well. I don't know about that. That reminds me, now that I think about it, this is not relevant at all. This is just reminded of this because of what I just said. I would like to see a new spin-off of Star Trek set in the HR and legal departments of Starfleet in the months and years following the announcement that has been unexpectedly and 100% with 100% certainty proven that everybody who has ever gone in one of those transporter beam things. You know the things with Star Trek, they beam people down to the planet and they beam them back up. They turn you into light or something and you reform on the planet. I'd like to see a spin-off where it's being suddenly and unexpectedly proven that every time you do that, you die, and the you that ends up at your destination is just a clone, a brand new clone. So every time you've been put to a transporter, you died at being replaced. So I like the spin-off set in the human resources department and the legal department of Starfleet in the years and months following that. I think that would be very interesting. You might say it's an office thing. That sounds rather tedious. Well, you watch a lot of Star Trek from the 80s and 90s. A lot of it is just workplace drama. Rather tedious workplace drama, but we all love it. You watch people fish, we watch people go to the canteen, talking to what's her name. Who runs the canteen in Star Trek. What's her face? Ah, you know your one. Your one off The View. What's her face? She was in Ghost. She was in other stuff. Ah, you know your one. And then they show them going to the gym. Or they show them going to the holodeck version of the gym. Or they show them, doing all sorts of normal day-to-day workplace shit. They even show them going to bed sometimes. They show them sitting up in bed. They show Captain Picard sitting up in bed in his pyjamas reading some book. But you're going to tell me that having a thing about the HR and legal department would be less interesting than that? I respectfully disagree. In fact, it would be so interesting and possibly so low budget, so we'd be able to go back to having 26 episode seasons, unlike the streaming era where they make 10 episodes every 3 years and then they're done. No, we can make, we'll go back to making 26 episodes a year, like a procedural drama or something. So be all set in an office, maybe a few visits to some courthouses. That'd be great. So let's do that. Into your head. If you're listening to this in a car as part of a motorcade, perhaps you're escorting a head of state from one place to another, or perhaps you're in a funeral cortege. Is that what it's called? A funeral cortege. A line of traffic basically going from a church to a cemetery as part of a funeral itinerary. And you might be thinking, why would you be listening to this shit during a funeral? Well, I don't know if you've ever been to one of these funerals. A point comes often where everyone goes to the mass or whatever they're having, and then they get back into their cars and they all drive separately to a cemetery. So they're all in their separate cars. Now, I don't know if you think everyone who's in a car in that line of 20 or 30 cars going to a cemetery, do you think everyone in that is sitting there bawling, crying, or listening to funeral music, or singing hymns, or praying? No, no. Everyone at a funeral has degrees of separation from the deceased person. There's people there who just know them vaguely from their workplace. There's people there who are just neighbours from around the corner. There's people there who are family. There are people there who caused the death. There's going to be people there who are some distance from the lost. They haven't suffered the direct loss themselves. The privacy of their cars. Cars in our modern civilization, they're somewhat a home from home. So you do what you like in there. You listen to whatever you want. You just have to remember not to pull up too loudly. Because when you play something in a car nowadays, you have the same speakers they use at a Metallica concert in a stadium. So you can be thudding all over the place. People can hear what you're playing. Pass a car sometimes in traffic now, and the car has a dial tone coming out of it. Fucking ridiculous. That's another thing you might hear at a funeral. Hopefully it's nothing disrespectful. It's not disrespectful per se to use your phone in your car while you're driving as part of a funeral cortege. You might be looking for directions. You might be checking, are you in the right funeral? If this is a major funeral route, just as we have major shipping routes, you want to make sure you're on the right one, that you're following the right funeral. There's probably several funeral routes from several churches to several cemeteries, crisscross, merge for a while and then separate. You want to make sure you follow the right one and you don't get stuck in the wrong cortege, funeral cortege. Is that what it is? The line of traffic, anyway, that's part of the transportation system of your standard motor funeral. Of course, then there's another part of a funeral. It's just people walking. People get out of the car and they walk. They say, I'm going to walk this. It's a sign of respect. I'm going to put my feet on the ground. I'm going to walk in dog shit for half a mile. And that'll show my respect for the dead person. I'll arrive exhausted. There's a high chance they'll need to call the emergency services because half the people going to this are elderly. We'll walk and 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 walk. One of us will be carrying a cross. Someone else will be there with a sponge dabbing that person's forehead. And then they'll get to the cemetery and they'll kind of forget what they're doing because they get all caught up in this. Because people like this are enthusiastic. There's people who are very enthusiastic about their funerals that they go to. They take them very seriously, so they might get lost in it, still forget what they're doing. They'll arrive there, they'll have been carrying the cross, and then they'll get to the cemetery and they'll erect the cross, and then they'll put the chief mourner up on it, and someone will get out a hammer and nails, and hopefully then someone will say, wait a minute, what are we doing? What are we doing? No. No hammers and nails, no. No, that's just for sons of deities. We used a rope. We just tied them up. No, they wouldn't do that. Obviously, that's ridiculous. They wouldn't do that. But people get very wrapped up in these funerals. Some people are very good at going to them. They're professional funeral goers. They know how to do it. They want a certain number of those people at your funeral because they just lead the way and everyone knows what they're doing. And that's great. The thing is all organized. We're all organized. Like the way the Romans build roads. Everything runs like clockwork. Nobody has to think about anything. They don't want to be thinking at a funeral either. That's why they all have their radios on, blasting out Metallica or something. You hear all the speakers on the cars thudding. If they put them up too loud, they go thud, 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 thud. Thud, 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 thud. Thud, 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 thud. There's a song, Thud Thumping, is it? By Chumbawamba. Now, is that the one that goes, do you suffer from long-term memory loss? I don't remember. Or is it the one that goes, I get locked out, but I get up again. Ain't nobody going to bring me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. Ain't nobody going to bring me down. And then the woman who sounds Irish, I'm not sure if she's Irish, but she sounds Irish. She goes, pissing the night away. Pissing the night away. And then the English fella comes back in and goes, I get knocked out, but I get up again. I never gonna bring me down. Now that's a song. Young people who are throwing a funeral for a young person might choose to play that at the funeral. But I don't think you want to be blasting it out of the car speakers if you're just one of the attendees. Might be taken up wrong. They still exist, that band. You hear them talking sometimes about how they had their 5 minutes of fame. Sometimes it's called 5 minutes of fame. Sometimes it's called 15 seconds of fame. I suppose it depends on how long it lasted. Usually when they say 15 seconds of fame, it's usually a bit more than that. They have a month or two at least. That song was played on the radio a lot during the 90s or 2000s, whenever it came out. And then they had, around the same time, there were these two bald fellas, Right Said Fred. What was their song? Doesn't spring to mind now. Right Said Fred had some novelty hit, and then they had some other novelty hit, and then they got a Twitter account and started typing shit, which they still do to this day. I can't even remember. Was it something about their hat or their head? Oh, deeply dippy about the something. Ah, oh, that's shit. Yeah, that's bullshit. Yeah. Yeah, that was a load of shit. Makes Chumbawamba look good. So no to Right Said Fred. That was a load of bollocks. Absolute load of bollocks. Now, don't take this as endorsing Right Said Fred. I do not endorse Right Said Fred, but they did deeply dippy about the something something. Something something legs that go on for miles and miles. Basically a rip-off of ZZ Top. They did their whole song about legs, didn't they? ZZ Top, these Americans. There was three of them. Two of them had huge beards. Then there was a third fella. I think he was the drummer. He didn't have a beard, but his surname was Beard. They did that song about legs, didn't they? It was something along the lines of, she's got legs and knows how to use them. got legs and knows how to use them. Got legs, he knows how to use them. Got legs and knows how to use them. They were America's answer to Led Zeppelin. By Americans' answer to Led Zeppelin, I mean less fucking depressing than Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin, you'd switch them on and they'd go, hello, here's a depressing fucking song. A depressing fucking song. And then you listen back to it now and it's even more depressing because one of them is dead. The other one, his voice went to shit around 1987. And they're all going round going, there's a lady who knows all that glitters is gold. And she's buying a stairway to heaven. Don't want to turn this into a full concert. Oh, I was only using one of my harmonicas, incidentally, on this occasion. For those who heard the previous episode, I didn't do the dual harmonica thing today. I was concentrating, trying to remember what the fucking Right Said Fred song was. I'm trying to remember a Led Zeppelin song other than Stairway to Heaven, because they have more depressing songs than that. If you get the album Presence by Led Zeppelin, everything on that sounds like a Sunday afternoon in the middle of November, when Halloween midterm break is truly gone and it's pissing down from the heavens and there's nothing on TV except sport and you have tons of homework to do. It's about to get dark around 4 p.m. and then the next morning, of course, is Sunday. The next morning is Sunday and then you're back to school on the Monday. That's what Led Zeppelin's Presence sounds like, especially if you listen to it on a Saturday afternoon. One of their songs is, ah, 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 ah. That's actually the chorus. I'm not just going, ah, because I can't remember the words. It's Robert Plant going, ah, 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 ah. In fact, I would argue, I think the more honest long-term listeners would agree that that is one of the most accurate renditions of vocals that I've ever done on this program. So well done, me. That's great. It was worth sitting through all that chumber-wumber crap to get to that, wasn't it? That was great. That's lifted my spirits now. As it happens, it is a Sunday afternoon as I record this, and it has been pissing from the heavens all week. Has been cold out, so I don't really care. I'm an adult who has a pastime involving sitting in the spare room and I don't even look out the window. In fact, the curtains are 80% closed and I'm facing away from them. I'm facing slightly towards the desk and slightly towards the ensuite toilet. I switched on the light in the ensuite toilet because it gives me just enough incidental light. It throws enough incidental light into the room. That's a good use for the toilet. And unlike many of the children who had to listen to that shit, I don't have to go back to school tomorrow. No, I'm finished school, except in my dreams. In my dreams, I go back to school every fucking week. The night before last, I went back for about the fifth time to my first job, a shipping agency. They're doing very well in my dream. In the real world, they're no longer in Dublin city centre. They moved out to some place where I could never commute to, even if I was able to work anymore. But no, in my dreams, they're still in the city centre and they've got very fancy. They're doing very well. They're very nice offices. In fact, I much prefer when I dream about that place than when I dream about the last job I had. It's a lot more fun, so I do appreciate that. We've a lot to get on with today. Items that need to be attended to, issues that need to be addressed. We're positively booming to the seams with topics. We've got topics coming out of, oh Christ, where are they coming out of now? The woodwork, I suppose. Does any of this furniture count as woodwork? What would it have to be to count as woodwork? I presume it can't just be stuff that's made of wood, no. Some fella has to have crafted it in a studio somewhere, in his arts and crafts studio. He needs to have filed away with sandpaper and a chisel, got a big old tree trunk and carved it into the shape of a desk. You can't just call stuff woodwork if it's bits of wood stuck together from a flat pack. No, that doesn't count as work because nobody's paying you for it when you do that. You're working for yourself. If you're assembling flatback furniture in your home for yourself, does that count as being self-employed? I don't know. Or does it just count as putting away the shopping? Just more involved than usual. It used to be you'd buy furniture. You'd pick a house into the shop and you'd say, yes, I'd like this delivered, please, to the following address. And then you'd say the address. And then they'd say, hold on, hold your horses, let me get a pen to write this down. Saturday afternoon, you're in a busy furniture store. There's at least 100 people buying furniture just in the past hour. And then you can just say the address to me and I'll just remember it for you. No, why am I? What is this mastermind? Some memory feat thing. No, let me get a biro or a pen or a pencil or something and I'll write it down. Or else I'll type it into something. Let me get to the buttons first so I can start typing it. Don't just start saying addresses at people. Eventually they'll get the address down somewhere. They'll say, a man in the van will call you half an hour before he gets lost trying to find your house. And then he'll call you again half an hour after that because he'll have got lost trying to find your house. And then you'll get mad at him. And then he'll get mad at you, and you'll get mad at him, and then you'll both get mad at whoever names these roads that you live on, and whoever designed this stupid fucking postcode system that doesn't work. We didn't have a postcode system in this country until about 10, 15 years ago. They gave everyone a thing called an air code. You look up our air code, it gives you a made-up imaginary address in Legoland that's of no use to anyone. Anytime you give your address to anyone, you say, now this is the real address and this is the real air code, but the two don't match because everything is shit. Nothing is done right anywhere. This is the era of flying cars. Well, thank Christ we don't have flying cars, because if we did, they would be shit. There would be a huge disappointment. We like to all say how disappointed we are that the future we've grown up in doesn't have the flying cars we were all expecting when we were kids. We should be glad because they'd be shit. If we had flying cars today, they'd all be shit. Every last one of them would be shit. Every last one of them, they'd all be absolute shit. They'd be some of the worst flying cars you've ever seen, including the ones you see in some sci-fi movie that was made in 1925. That's clearly a cardboard box with the lid of a washing machine stuck onto it. So it'd be worse than that. Worse than that. At least the ones in the sci-fi films. It doesn't matter if they don't work, because it's all down to imagination and theatre of the mind. But if they had them today, the ones you get now, they would need to work. They need to function properly. And they need to be able to be driven by a normal human being. The same type of people who you encounter at traffic lights and in car parks. You'd have them operating a thing that flies through the air. Is that really what you want? Well, that's what I want. I just know it would be shit. It would be shit if we had it. So people used to say, be careful what you wish for. Why? Nothing we wish for comes true. What difference does it make? Oh, Whoopi. That's the word I was trying to remember. Whoopi was the first comic I bought as a child. It was the first comic I got into. It closed down shortly after I got into it, merged into Wizard and Chips. Well, Whoopi is a word I was trying to remember earlier when discussing Star Trek, the one who runs the canteen, Guinan. She was played by Whoopi Goldberg. At least I remember that name, Whoopi. Whoopi. I don't like when I can't remember names in these segments. For one thing, it makes me sound stupid. And if I want to make myself not sound stupid, I have to come back and edit myself into it, saying whatever makes me sound not stupid. That's like opening up your car engine and messing about with it. I'm not a mechanic. Editing your stuff like that is about as reckless as if you'd say, oh, I don't like the way I pronounce the word cat. I'm going to do some surgery on my own vocal cords. I'm going to open up my throat and see if I can fix that. Maybe I can find which cords are causing that. Maybe unwrap them or fix them up with electrical tape or something. No, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that. So it's as bad as that. If you're a podcaster and you're going messing with the things you recorded, trying to replace bits of words, Sometimes I replace bits of words or move them about just because they don't make any sense, because I've misspoken. I've said the wrong word or I've slurred the words. You have no idea what I've said, even if you're used to my voice. Incidentally, people on YouTube have been saying, oh, that's an interesting voice. And it must be English. What the actual people listen to this voice on YouTube in my Into Your Head short videos. They listen to this and say, oh, that's fascinating, that accent. I wonder what part of England you're from. I know to you foreigners, it's a bit like confusing someone from America with someone from Canada. It's not that big a deal, I know. But still, if you're familiar enough with English accents to listen to someone and go, oh, that fella must be from England, surely you can distinguish between an English accent and a fucking ridiculous cornucopia of various regional accents from Ireland combined with dental issues and too much caffeine and energy drinks. I don't know. I listen to you Americans sometimes, I know, and I have no idea what part of America you're from, because you all sound the same, obviously. Of course, if you bring this up with the Americans, they'll say, what's an accent? There's no such thing as an accent. I'm American. I speak properly. It's only other people who have accents. That's what I used to think of when I was a child. I thought, oh, those people have accents. What's that about? I don't have an accent. I just speak normal, proper English. I'm like a BBC Radio 4 presenter from the 1950s. I speak whatever the Irish equivalent of the Queen's English is. I don't know. I did at least learn a bit about it when I was a child because we moved around a bit. So I understood then quite early in my life. There were different accents. He moved around. My accent changed a couple of times during my childhood and adolescence. And then in my 20s, having worked in Dublin City Centre for a few years, I got a temporary transfer to a place that wasn't in Dublin for a short time and found myself picking up the accent while I was at work and then dropping it again and then moving to the arse end of County Kildare for more than a decade and picking up a bit of that accent. I tell you one thing I didn't pick up, and that was an English accent. Not that there's anything wrong with having an English accent. It's perfectly fine. Nothing wrong with having an English accent. There's no law against it. It's perfectly legal and legitimate. You can't help it. There's not much you can do to protect yourself against it. And don't judge people who have acquired an English accent. They haven't done it to annoy you or offend you. It's very unlikely that they're doing it to sound cool. No, it's just something that happened because they've lived in more than one part of the world. They got up off their arses and moved around a bit, experienced a bit of the world, got outside and lived more than a mile away from their mothers when they got into their 20s. No, don't judge people for their accents. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. They should judge you for never acquiring an accent other than whatever one you were brought up with. You've stayed put for so long. You've probably watched Star Trek and you think, oh, Christ, they all speak funny. What's that about? Captain Picard, he's supposed to be French. He has an English accent. But then he goes on and he talks to the aliens and they all understand him. What in the name of... Anyway, Whoopi was the name I was trying to remember. And Whoopi was the name of the first weekly comic I read, which quickly merged into Whizzer and Chips. Whizzer and Chips became my mainstay for several years. That's gone now. They're all dead. All of these comics, they're all dead. Except that shit with Dennis the Menace. That's still going. It's also the name of a type of cushion. Not a genuine cushion. Quite the opposite, in fact. An ingenuine cushion. It's literally a fake cushion. A whoopee cushion. I don't know if you have them outside of this part of the world. You go into a joke shop as a child, you get these cushions, you put it on someone's seat and they sit on it and basically it makes a farting sound. Makes it sound like they've broken wind. They sit on it and they make a belching sound. It was absolutely hilarious. Everyone would burst into tears of laughter. They'd go, oh, look, or oh, listen. Don't smell though. Don't try to smell because that'll ruin the illusion because you won't smell anything. If you're ever involved in the setting up of a whoopee cushion prank, you're planning it with your friends, someone's going to come in and sit on it, you get your friends to go, oh, isn't that appalling, you farhead, that's disgusting. Don't say, oh my God, you smell that, because then they'll go, no, I don't smell anything, oh, this wasn't real at all. that pulls someone out of the fiction, so don't do that. Perhaps modern will be cushions, with a smell, I don't know. Surely by now they must have invented some way of having a smell. They used to have spray things that he'd spray and it would smell like shit or vomit or eggs that had gone off or something. Or did they make that up? I'm not sure. I know when we were children, people used to go around throwing eggs at windows. And the idea was you'd leave them for a while and then they'd become rotten eggs and they'd smell appalling. But I'm sure there must have been a fake rotten egg smell that comes in a can. Maybe they got rid of that because of the ozone layer. Sometime in the mid-80s, everyone decided the ozone layer is fucked. It's kind of taking the piss if we're letting our children buy these things where you literally spray fake farts into the air. They're probably even more dangerous and harmful than normal farts. We're already telling us that the ozone layer was being destroyed by cows farting. That's what they used to tell us in school. We all thought it was hilarious as children. Oh, it's all caused by methane from cows' arses. So no, it wouldn't have been right for them to go, cows' farts are ruining your future. This planet's going to be dead by the time you're 30, but by all means, buy this spray can full of farts and fake rotten eggs and spray it everywhere just for fun. No, wouldn't be appropriate at all. So that was Whoopee Cushions. There was a joke shop. I think there probably still is. There's a joke shop in Dublin near the Stephen's Green Shopping Centre. Whatever that street where the theatre is. What's that called? Doesn't really matter. Not like I'm giving directions. I'm sure you can find it if you have to. There used to be a joke shop there. I presume they sell jokes. I only know about joke shops from seeing them advertised in comics, such as, for example, Whoopee. I wonder did that cause brand confusion. You know, these Whoopee things, you'd buy a Whoopee cushion and it would trick people into farting. And then you had Whoopee comic for children. And then you had Goldberg. I think Whoopi Goldberg came to prominence around the same time that Whoopi comic was in its closing years. Now, they were on separate continents. Nobody in America would have heard of Whoopi comic. But people in England, where Whoopi comic was published, would have heard of Whoopi Goldberg, because she was in movies. She was in that thing Ghost with Patrick Swayze. Patrick Swayze was still alive at this point. He was playing a dead man, which sadly he is now. He died at a very young age, under circumstances not completely dissimilar to those portrayed in the movie, except unfortunately it wasn't fictional. He's dead now. He's dead as a doornail. That's very sad. But in the movie he was just pretending to be dead. He was playing a ghost of himself. I suppose in a way a ghost is somebody pretending to be alive, is it? Or acting as if alive. They're not coming along and saying, oh, hello, I'm still alive. No, they're saying, I'm a ghost. I'm a dead person carrying out activities that a dead person doesn't normally get involved in. A dead person doesn't normally come back and start doing pottery classes with their wives, do they? They're involving themselves in activities that are not considered de rigueur for dead people. Dead people usually just stay away. If every dead person decided, I'm going to come back, get involved and go to night classes in pottery school or something. There's lots of community schools in this part of the world. Adults go to night classes, pottery and yoga and French, all sorts. I went to a course in web development many years ago. Can you imagine how quickly they'd get booked out if all the dead people were allowed to enroll in them too? That would be a problem, wouldn't it? Or would it? Would they pay for it? Would they add funding to the system, perhaps? I don't know. When I was going to college, when foreign students came in, they brought money into the system because they were charged extra fees. They didn't get the same grants locals got, so there was that. So maybe with dead people, that brings something into the system as well. So that was what Patrick Swayze did. He came back, he started doing pottery with his wife, he was still alive. And then Whoopi Goldberg was involved. Was she a psychic or something, or she put him in touch with his wife? I don't remember what she did in it. I just remember that she did in it. She did in it. And then she did Star Trek, running the canteen, and she's everybody's friendly ear. People go in there and they get some free counselling offer. Hello, here's some fake alcohol. Now tell me your troubles and I'll make up some shit, and then I'll go off and not appear again for another 6 episodes. She played a singing nun, the usual corny nun singing thing. Maybe that was the first ever comedy thing ever to involve nuns singing. I find it hard to believe that it was. If you're doing some sketch or some film where your nuns are doing something that nuns would normally do, you're being a bit obvious. Maybe she was in the pockets of big nun. Maybe religious organizations paid movie companies to try and show female clerics in a good light. Not that they're being seen in a particularly bad light back then. They are now. There's all the shit that's emerged, at least in this country. Not good shit. Bad shit. Takes a while to come out. You get stuck. And then when you get it out, it's out, but it's in your house. You get the shit out, but it's in your house. Which is almost worse. You have to worry about whether your pipes are blocked. Now, if your pipes blocked, that's a problem as well. Because your personal pipes are unblocked, you have to worry about your community. Even if you have your pipes unblocked to your house, then it goes into the broader sewage system. And any blockage that happens in the broader sewage system could affect thousands of people. So the further the shit gets away from you, the more of a nuisance it can become to the broader society. That's the thing you have to remember. Now, there's been reams and reams and reams written by journalists and writers in the past couple of decades about everything that's come out. This is not a documentary. Suffice to say, broader society now is dealing with the blockages as they push their way out. At least they're out in the open somewhat. Well, not as out in the open as they would have been 1,000 years ago when all the sewers were open sewers running along the sides of the streets, which probably brought the plague down on everyone. You don't want that either. You keep it in the pipes until it gets well away from society, and then maybe you have transparent pipes then. When it gets to the courts, you have transparent pipes there, so everyone can have a look at it. You can have a tribunal and bring everything out in the open, but still contained within a transparent pipe made of very tough glass. Is it elephant glass, they call it? I went to Toronto in Canada in the early 2000s. We went up in the CN Tower. It's a huge, tall tower in Toronto. It looks like something from a space age city. A tall tower that's got a kind of disc shaped on top of it. Looks like something you might see on a Martian landscape in a science fiction thing. We went up in that. It was very, very high up. It'd be something like 130 stories or something like that. And then you go up to the top in the elevator, and then you go up another few steps of stairs, and you get to the top. You have this fantastic view of the whole city, and there's a glass floor, a terrifying glass floor you can walk onto and look down through it. And I think they call that elephant glass. They at least make a very big deal out of their claim that an elephant could walk on that. That's what they were implying. An elephant could walk on that and it wouldn't break. I took a step onto that. It was terrifying. Down below you, thousands and thousands of feet of nothingness. Absolutely terrifying. And we did that for leisure. That's what tourists do for leisure. Two cats walk into a bar. One of the cats goes straight up to the bar counter and says, "Can I have a pint of your finest tap water, please?" And the barman says, "Certainly, sir." Now, the price is very low, but I have to ask you to open an account for this, and I'll tell you why. And I apologise in advance for any inconvenience, but I like to charge a fair price for my tap water. And the only way I can do that is wait until the end of the financial year when my water bill comes in. I'll get my total tap water bill and divide it by the number of customer orders for pints of tap water for that entire year. I usually end up paying a very small amount, but I won't know until the end of the financial year. So that's why I need to open up an account for you for that, so I can bill you. And the cat says, "Are you aware that I'm a cat?" And the barman says, "Yes, I am. That's why I made sure to mention this, because I know opening up an account as a cat, applying for credit from a bar, is particularly complicated for you." And the cat says, "There's no need to patronise me, sir. I know all about opening up accounts. I'm a talking cat. I'm not your bog standard cat who comes in begging for milk. I'm a talking cat who's come into a bar. In fact, I've purchased many pints of alcohol off you over the years. You and I have appeared in stories and the podcast together for nigh on 20 years now. So can we stop with the shit? And the barman says, okay, fair enough, fair enough. Well, here's the form, and I'll just need a copy of a couple of utility bills. Not your water bill, because that'll just cause it. Well, I don't know why not your water bill, but that seems like that might be problematic, because this is all about the water bill. If I ask for your water bill, I don't know how that would complicate matters, but it just seems like there might turn out to be some way that would complicate matters, and let's not take that risk. And the cat says, I don't get a fucking water bill, you moron. Water bills were introduced for domestic customers in this country about a decade ago. They were then abolished because of a voter backlash. So there's no such thing as a domestic water bill. And the barman says, oh, that's great. I don't have to worry that you're going to give me a water bill as one of your utility bills. So any other two utility bills, please. And the cat says, certainly. Here's a bill I get from my taxi company for trips to and from this bar. Here's another bill that I get from the electricity company for electricity, which fuels my various activities that I do outside of this bar. In fact, also while inside this bar, because of course I charge my phone at home and I bring it in here and I use it here. So I'm using portable electricity that I've got from my home here. What else do you need? A bank statement probably, is it? And the barman says, oh no, we don't need a bank statement. That would be ridiculous. Why would I need a bank statement off a cat to buy tap water? That would be fucking ridiculous. What is wrong with you? You don't live in the real world, cat. Do you know that? You don't live in the real world. You live in the magical fairy tale fantasy world where you go into bars. You talk to the barman and ask for a pint of your finest tap water. The barman asks you for a copy of a couple of utility bills. But then there's some nonsense about why it would be a problem if you supplied a domestic water bill, but also why that's not going to be an issue. And furthermore, actually, now that I think about it, the thing about going, why would I need a bank statement? That's ridiculous. Is itself ridiculous. Because if I'm going to be ridiculous enough to require two domestic utility bills, anyone knows anytime you're opening an account or anything, if they ask for utility bills, they're going to ask for bank statements as well. It's de rigueur when you're applying for things, especially financial products. It's just de rigueur. Are you familiar with that word, Pat? De rigueur. I think it's either D-E-R-I-G-E-U-R or D-E-R-I-E-R. I-G-E-U-R, I forget which. I don't normally have to... Well, actually, funny you should mention that. This is the narrator speaking now. I use the phrase de rigueur. I've used it several times recently in my Matchstick Cats webcomics. I have one of my Matchstick Cats saying it. Now that I'm saying it out loud as part of an aural two cats walk into a bar story, and I say it out loud, and then I try to have the barman saying what the spelling is. I can't think of what the correct spelling is. So it's perfectly fine when I'm writing it down. But then when I'm just saying it vocally, then the spelling becomes an issue. That's ridiculous. The whole point of a podcast, you can circumvent the whole world of writing and reading. You're going back to some of the oldest traditions that man ever had. Back before the printing press. Back before we had cave paintings and all that shit. Back before we had papyrus and things written on stones and handed down to us by a hand reaching down from the sky to Moses. Back before we had anything, we had sitting around the campfire telling each other stories that were handed down from person to person. And I'll tell you one thing that didn't happen during that. They didn't say, I wonder how you spell this. How do I spell this? I can't remember how I spell this. No, they hadn't invented spelling yet. Some arsehole later on, after hundreds of thousands of years, decided to invent spelling. And then that turned storytelling into an elitist thing. Mostly nowadays, the only time you're going to be sitting around a fire is if you're homeless and you're in some city where the homeless people gather in winter around a barrel that they set on fire. Like in that Phil Collins video. There's a Phil Collins video. He's homeless and he's walking around the homeless area and warming his hands against the fire. Which Phil Collins video was that? I don't know. It wasn't Another Day in Paradise. I know that would be the obvious one. It was one of the other ones. Yes. I was saying that the invention of writing meant that the people who were telling these stories around the campfire got shoved aside by these authors and writers and newspaper journalists with their printing presses, and they became the leaders then. It's exactly like the way a lot of children's books, grumpy adults on social media nowadays, they like to complain that a lot of children's books are now being written by celebrities. Comedians who are on sketch shows in England and all that sort of thing. A lot of them have become children's authors in recent years, and people moan about that. Say, how dare that famous person become a children's author? The only people who should be children's authors are Roald Dahl and, what's her name, Enid Blyton, or Gnid Blyton, as I knew her as a child. Wrote The Famous Five and The Secret Seven and Noddy, and is nowadays considered a bit racist in a of her time way. Her name was written as her signature on all of her books, Enid Blyton. So it looked like G-N-I-D instead of E-N-I-D. So through my entire childhood, I thought there was a very famous children's author called Gnid Blyton. And we didn't have internet. You couldn't look her up. The only way you could look it up was by going to a library and getting out one of the many books by Gnid Blyton that were available. The first thing you saw was the word Gnid. So why would you doubt yourself about that? It was literally on the cover in her fancy joined-up writing. There's no reason you would doubt that at all. Dr. Seuss was a lot easier. And if you were one of the kids who couldn't read it, that wasn't a problem, because Dr. Seuss is the sort of thing your parents read to you if you're not at reading age yet. So that's not a problem. I think we're approaching the end of this episode of Into Your Head. If you want more of this shit, and why wouldn't you, in video form, I just put out the fourth omnibus edition of Into Your Head Short. It's about 35 minutes of selected tripe from recent programs that have been turned into self-contained short videos. So go follow Into Your Head Shorts on YouTube, TikTok, or Instagram. You can find it all on the website, intoyourhead.ie. This is getting a bit serious, isn't it? Plugging things. No, we're not doing this. This isn't some My tongue is rolled up like a carpet from going. That's weird. No, I don't want to do any more of that. Not least because this is a talk show, not a musical performance. No, we're not going to make musical performances the mainstay of this program ever. That'll be a huge change of format. That'll be like when that station that Adam Carolla used to be on, when he replaced Howard Stern on the West Coast of America. His flagship station was a talk station. And they decided one day we're going to blow up the station. They turned it into a music station or oldies or sports or something. They said, we're going to blow up the station. So they blew up the station. I'm not going to blow up this podcast and turn it into a musical format. No, that's not a thing. So no to that. Next episode, it'll still be me saying stuff. It'll always be me saying stuff. It'll never be anything other than that. Except with the odd interjection of relevant musical numbers. Anyway, good morning.